Hello and welcome to ICTJ's podcast, where we discuss news and developments in transitional justice. In today's episode, we are very pleased to have a special guest with us. Philippe Leroux-Martin is here. He is a Canadian lawyer with extensive experience in Bosnia and Herzegovina. He has a new book out, which we are talking about today, entitled Diplomatic Counterinsurgency: Lessons from Bosnia and Herzegovina. It was recently published, and he's at ICTJ to discuss some of the lessons that he's observed over his time in Bosnia-Herzegovina and how those lessons could be applied to current efforts and developments in transitional justice. So welcome, Philippe.
Welcome.
I was wondering if you could just introduce what is the book about and what are some of the main themes that you're focusing on in this new publication?
The book is essentially a reflection on my experience working in Bosnia for several years, and also in Kosovo to a certain extent. The book has two main parts. The first part of the book deals with the political crisis in which I was personally involved in Bosnia that took place in 2007. It is an eyewitness account of that political crisis and follows the the developments of that specific crisis and seeks to expose the dynamics of these environments in which we intervene when we intervene in places like Bosnia or Kosovo and seek to implement peace agreements. And the political crisis that is described or that is chronicled in the first part of the book was an important one. It had, when we were working on it, we had the impression that something very important was happening, but that we didn't necessarily have the time to follow exactly all the ramifications of what was going on. So that is one of the reason why I wrote the book. It was to take time and take a step back and then try to reflect more deeply about what was going on at that point. So that's essentially the first part of the book. It tells the story of that crisis, and it essentially chronicles a challenge by a certain political faction in Bosnia to the powers of the international community. And it's the story of a challenge, and it's the story, more importantly, of a defeat. And it shows how the powers of the international community were defeated by a political faction in Bosnia. The second part of the book then, which is called Reflections on the Battle, moves on and tries to extract a number of lessons from our experience generally with the peace implementation process in Bosnia, but also from that specific crisis. And it offers three main suggestions, and the first one is what I called the non-violent wars, and I essentially argue in the book that when we intervene in places like Bosnia or Kosovo, that we might be successful in ending armed conflict through the manner in which we apply military force, but we do not necessarily stop conflict as such, and I argue that in these contexts, that war doesn't stop with the end of armed conflict, but tends to transform itself into what I call a nonviolent war, which is a specific form of nonviolent conflict, which is being waged by wartime elites and constituencies in order to achieve or pursue a wartime objective. So I trace the source of these nonviolent wars to the manner in which we intervene in places like Bosnia or Kosovo. And the book argues that if you look at the manner in which we apply military force in these contexts, that we no longer wage these large interstate industrial wars like we used to, but we do in fact apply limited military means in order to achieve limited military objectives. So we manage to, through a bombardment campaign or a specific form of military intervention, we manage to put an end to armed conflict, but what we do is we create a political space for conflict to be solved through diplomacy. So that is the first main suggestion of that second part. The second one pertains to these notions of nonviolent insurgency and diplomatic counterinsurgency. And the book argues essentially that insurgency and counterinsurgency are not purely military phenomenon, and it is perfectly possible for factions in contexts like we faced in Bosnia or Kosovo to seek to undermine or overthrow the power of fragile states primarily through nonviolent means. So the book suggests that this is a specific challenge that many international interventions will face when they intervene in peace processes, and that they will have to counter this nonviolent resistance as they're trying to uphold the nonviolent, the space of nonviolence that they're working on. So the notion of diplomatic counterinsurgency then must be understood in relation to nonviolent insurgency. It is the way by which we seek through diplomacy and through nonviolent means to prevent nonviolent insurgency from succeeding and allow society to maintain the space of nonviolence that was agreed upon.
Well, thank you. And I want to go back to the first kind of concept you're describing that the book suggests, which is this notion of nonviolent warfare. And I think for people in this field, that's a very interesting way to phrase it. And you've explained it well. I'm wondering if you could look back at the work that you were doing in Bosnia and look at how all these political crises were unfolding around you, the work you were doing there. If the people there and your colleagues, victims groups, other community organizations, political organizations, if there was a realization that this was actually what was going on and that it wasn't peacetime, but it was actually nonviolent warfare, how do you think that would have changed dynamics on the ground?
There are two things that I think would have been beneficial for us if we had acknowledged or understood better the dynamics, or be willing to accept that we might have been managing the nonviolent extension of the war. And that is, first of all, that I think we would have not underestimated the intensity of the conflict in which we were involved. And we enacted a number of measures that did not change or amend a number of constitutional vetoes that were provided under the peace agreement, but during the political crisis, we tried to change a number of conditions under which these vetoes could be activated. And when we did that, I think the book is clear about that. I think we clearly underestimated the impact that these measures would have. And I think you can make a reasonable argument by saying that had we been more conscious or willing to accept that we were managing a power arrangement that constrained the evolution of a nonviolent war, I think we would have been more ready to accept that these changes that we were looking at would trigger a very, very strong reactions. The notion of nonviolent wars is particularly useful for international intervention. I think it allows international intervention to be more efficient. The book makes this point about international intervention generally, but I think it applies to transitional justice as well, which is that when you intervene in complex conflicts or in nonviolent wars, you never do transitional justice on its own. You never do transitional justice in isolation. You interfere with a very intense conflict, and you are bound and destined to create and trigger reactions within this conflict. And I think that is extremely important for people who are involved with international intervention generally, but, and also with transitional justice, to realize that when you come in a specific conflict, that your intervention will either be supported by certain factions in a group who will try to harness your impact as an international intervener, or your impact will be resisted by other factions. So it is extremely important for people who are managing projects on transitional justice to be aware of the existence of these very intense conflicts in which they're intervening. And by being aware and by understanding the dynamics and the nature of the nonviolent wars, then I think they will be in a better position to anticipate the evolution of this conflict and the impact that they will have on this conflict and the type of resistance that they're likely to encounter. And that has a lot of tactical and strategic implications. It means on timing and resources and the type of alliances that you look at, you might be thinking very differently if you start thinking that you're not simply working on a neutral transitional justice system, but that you are, regardless of your intentions, you are intervening in a nonviolent war. And I say that very often. If you conceive conflict as a conflict system, you may be very well neutral in your intentions, but you're never neutral in your effect. And you hear that very often from people on the development side of intervention saying, well, we're only a technical organization, or even humanitarian organizations will say, well, we're only, we're neutral in this conflict. That may very well be the case in your public statements or even in your good faith intentions, but it's never the case on the ground when you start acting.
And going back to this intervention, to focus on that a little bit more, you mentioned that in the immediate time period of opportunity that the international community has after an intervention, and after that, the power and influence and opportunities that that kind of international intervention has diminishes. And that's an interesting idea now as we look at some of the contemporary cases where intervention has happened, where the international community is present and trying to make a difference. Could you reflect on how you think, an idea, a lesson like that could be applied to current contexts, particularly in the Middle East? I know that this is on people's minds for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, and I think it is a very important realization. And some people, I've often, when talking about the book, said that it is, and I wrote a few pieces about this in the newspaper, saying that that we ought to be very humble when we intervene in these conflicts. And some people have argued that we can't be humble, and you need to be more proactive and be more optimistic about. But when I talk about humility, I think a better word would be realism, and I think that's what the book is trying to say, that you, when you intervene in a foreign environment, I think you have to acknowledge that your power is limited, and is not only limited, but is a diminishing resource. And so that has huge implications on how you strategize, and it means that you should seek to make the most of that limited resource. And so that, strategically speaking, that means that you should try to tackle the most difficult and heaviest issues at the height of your power, and not 5, 6, or 7 years after the beginning of international intervention, when resources are away and the focus has shifted. So that's a specific, I think, example. As far as the Middle East is concerned, I think if we acknowledge that our power is limited, and the book reflects on how we applied power in Bosnia and in Kosovo through a combination of military force and diplomacy, I think there's a case to be made for applying power more densely. And if we want to generate the number of diplomatic outcomes, it might be particularly important to combine our diplomacy with the threat of military intervention or the threat of military force. So that's one example. Then, secondly, I think it should also invite policymakers to see that they have a direct interest in aligning very closely military force and diplomacy. So if they are trying to counter a secessionist movement on a specific territory, then there are numerous ways in which military force can feed into diplomacy, and we can apply power more densely in that regard. So, and not only that, but then if the option of intervening militarily is off the table, then there are a number of ways by which you can apply power more densely as well, either through coalitions or through the manner in which you approach negotiations, and your ability in doing constitutional or electoral engineering. If you tackle these hard issues first and you do it well and you apply power efficiently, applying power more densely and smartly initially might yield much better results you know, in the future. And I think that should definitely be in the mind of people who are trying to figure out, you know, a way out of the Syrian war right now.
With that, I want to thank Philippe for speaking with us today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
His new book is called Diplomatic Counterinsurgency: Lessons from Bosnia and Herzegovina.